Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. 1 year ago, a group of Black Hills community leaders and community members gathered together for a life-changing journey. They packed their bags and traveled to the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles for training they hoped might transform the way we treat each other here at home. Joining us now from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio inside SDPB's Black Hills studio are members of the Rapid City Circle of Friends, otherwise known as Miniluzahan Okola Kichiapi Ambassadors. First, we have Karen Mortimer. She is Executive Director of MOA. Karen, welcome back.
Thank you, Lori. We're so happy to be here.
Joining us as well, Carl Jegeris. He is Chief of Police for Rapid City. Chief Jegeris, welcome back as well.
Thank you. Good morning, Lori.
And Amy Sazu is with Rural America Initiative. Amy, thanks for being here.
Thank you for the invitation. And I'm glad to be here.
We will add one more voice to the mix, and that is STPB's own China Lockett, who traveled to the Museum of Tolerance with the group. China, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Lori.
I want to start with Karen Mortimer a little bit so that we can bring listeners up to speed about why this journey was taken and just some of the efforts to gather so many people together to take the journey to the Museum of Tolerance a year ago in the first place.
Well, Lori, almost two years ago, Carl Jegeris and I were putting our heads together about how we can continue the journey of MOA, bringing people together. How can we enhance and maybe uptick the conversation, the experience with each other? And we were trying to look for something that would be meaningful, appropriate, and frankly a little bit out of the box. And so we conjured up and looked together at the opportunity to go to the Museum of Tolerance, and we put together a group of amazing people and left last January. It was a work in progress for many months before.
And China Lockett, you were able, on behalf of South Dakota Public Broadcasting, to go with for that journey to really cover it, and not participating in the training, but capturing some of those stories for us. But I'm still wondering, as you listened to those stories and gathered them, it had to be impactful for you as well. How do you look back a year later on that time in Los Angeles?
Yeah, well, what we saw at the Museum of Tolerance is really something that kind of sticks with you. It was there were a lot of interactive exhibits. The one that I specifically remember was on the Holocaust. So when members of MOA walked through that exhibit, there weren't a lot of dry eyes, a lot of people. It really takes you into the scene, and it's hard to look at, right? Afterwards, everybody who went through the exhibit sat in two separate talking circles, and they shared their feelings about the Holocaust, the exhibit, what they saw. And then I heard a lot of people relating it to colonization in South Dakota, which was really crazy to hear people from different backgrounds and different fields like having this conversation. There was a lot of understanding during that time. And then the group also heard from a Holocaust survivor and a member of the Little Rock Eight, who was one of the first to go to a school that was desegregated. And they learned a lot about like history and race relations. And I think like on a personal level, of course, it helps me understand while I'm covering stories where people are coming from. But more importantly, like for the group, everybody related the history of what they learned from these different situations and issues to modern day race relations, specifically in South Dakota and in the Black Hills. And the last day, what everyone did was brainstorm ideas to help resolve issues locally in their specific fields.
Chief Jegeris, you have one of those jobs in law enforcement where you have to be part of difficult conversations. You sort of, you know, every day you see, people at their worst, you see people suffering. You're held to an accountability, you know, for the community in a way that's different from what a lot of us have experienced. And yet you go to this training and it has to open that door for you even further in unexpected ways. Tell me a little bit about your experience, if you would, please.
Well, I think one of the most important things of the experience was really some relationship building of leaders that were present from the Rapid City area, from many different institutions here, but just representing many different circles in Rapid City. And I think having those difficult conversations with community leaders that are sincerely working to try to improve conditions in our city is very worthwhile, and it's very relevant to my role in our community, which is to reduce crime. And a lot of the historic mistrust that we have here in Rapid City is very legitimate, and it's very important to acknowledge some of the historical harm that occurred so that we can work together in an effective way towards healing, so that we can reduce some anger or even some hate that might occur in our community. Because at the end of the day, unfortunately, every day, our officers here in Rapid City see the result of historic issues, and they see it in anger, they see it sometimes in hate, and sometimes they see it in crime that is infused due to those issues. So for me, it was an awesome opportunity for everybody in the group really to shoulder the responsibility that all of us as a community member have to address the issues and to have the difficult conversations that need to be had.
Amy Sazu, I was in a bookstore not too long ago, and there was a magazine near the cash register that talked about racism in America, and I'll never forget the gentleman who was standing in line after me, who just sort of burst out in exasperation, why do we keep talking about racism? It doesn't exist anymore. And I thought, what an interesting, you know, his frustration was such that I thought that was a really interesting response to hear from him. It's kind of a dangerous sort of expression to say it doesn't exist anymore, but that's what he wanted to be true. Talk a little bit about just the challenges of confronting how much racism is actually sort of present culturally in a community, and really bringing that to the forefront as the beginning of the conversation, not the end.
Sure, that had to be one of my favorite aspects of the trip, was to talk about the actual history of our community and to have other community leaders and, you know, civic leaders and community members of all races discussing what happened here and the impact on our community today. And in those conversations at the Museum of Tolerance, we were able to get to the truth of them and then really look at how it affects everybody. And that was probably one of the most enlightening parts of that, of our trip, was to hear everybody talking about it and saying, what can we do now? And saying, you know, no wonder, you know, or it, just to have that little bit of understanding why Native American people feel that racism is so prominent here. But then again, to look at reasons why the non-Native community hasn't, is either unaware or just doesn't feel like it's as strong of an issue or as big of an issue as the Native American community. A lot of the work that came after our MOA trip really focused on that. And I think part of the work was the Susan Lands, and I think Steve Allender named it the inconvenient truth. And there's not a better way to describe it. But being able to openly have these conversations with community members of all races is something that I think the Native American community values. I know I do. I know our organization, Rural America Initiatives, and my coworkers and I have been proud to be part of that work and to be able to share these truths in a way that we can start building a stronger community based on that, our shared history here.
Yeah, Amy, tell me how you personally how do you participate in some of those conversations when, you know, so many people are afraid to even talk about race because they're afraid of being accused of being racist? How do you sort of accept the ups and downs and of a conversation as people struggle with finding the right words and intentions, you know, can go wrong, things can get said? Tell me about being in conversation about race and racism with people of different races.
It's definitely a double-edged sword, and it's a balance. The one thing that the MOA trip did do for me was help me to see other people as humans and to get to know each other and to see everybody outside of their jobs and just as people. And that was huge. Hmm. So I've made friends out of these people that we traveled with, and that helps have these conversations in the community. I know that we have allies in the community that I can look to have these conversations or to help. And if there's something that I don't understand, I know that there's people I can reach out to for more understanding. The hard part has been helping the rest of our community, our Native American community, see that and to recognize and acknowledge that we have people right now, people in really prominent roles in the community even, that are willing to have these conversations and want to hear what they have to say. And that is where a lot of the work that I know the Native American people that traveled with us out there, that's something that we're all kind of working on. How do we advocate? How do we bridge our communities? How do we get people to have these conversations and to trust that what they're saying is going to be heard? Mm. But that's, it is, it's difficult, and it's something that we kind of navigate on a situation basis, situation by situation, you know.
I want to explore that a little bit more, but first, Chief Jagaris, something that Amy said struck me when she said, you know, seeing people outside of their jobs. And you have one of those jobs. It's almost a cliche to say cops have a hard time stepping outside of that role. What was that like for you to sort of put away, you know, who you are professionally in this community and go sit as a, you know, as just, you know, Carl.
Well, yeah. So, well, one thing about me is I absolutely, truly, sincerely enjoy community engagement.
Yeah.
I really like to get to know the community, and I'm not afraid to let them get to know me as well. I'm a person. I have a job that does have a 24/7 demand and responsibility. Thankfully, with the help of many other committed individuals at the police department. But for me, I also am a lifelong learner, just like everybody else that went on this experience, and I learned things on a personal level, and but definitely I received renewed motivation to continue the difficult work that needs to be done.
Yeah. Karen, tell me a little bit about how this training in the past year has changed you personally. I want to talk a little bit about what's happened in just a minute, but I want to be personal with you and just say, how did you change?
Well, I think it so deepened my feelings about this. When I sit in a circle with Native and non-Native people, and we're in an uncomfortable conversation, and we're all near tears, and we can come out of that conversation where I think people are beginning to feel heard, I can see that trust is being built. Trust is still an issue. As Amy said, I think, in terms of the Native-non-Native relationship, I feel like we've made some gains, but I also think my eyes are again opened in terms of how much work we have left to do. Mm. I still have people practically pushing their finger in my chest telling me that I have white privilege. And I think from this trip, I understand even more why I have white privilege and how that plays into our relationships with one another. It's an increased willingness and sort of, I feel more heartfelt than I ever have before about this work. There's nothing more important. Mm.
We are going to have more conversation here in just a minute, but we need to take a quick break. We'll be back with more from the Mini-Luzahana Kolakichi Api Ambassadors in just a sec. Stay in the moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The TV comedy Schitt's Creek, that's S-C-H-I-T-T-S, starts a new season, making no big deal of its centerpiece gay relationship.
You make me feel right, David.
That is quite possibly one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard anyone say, outside of the Downton Christmas special.
Creators Eugene and Daniel Levy, next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, Noon Mountain, on SDPB Radio.
Broadcast of this program is made possible with your annual donations and by Aberesque Law Firm of Rapid City, providing legal services for clients throughout South Dakota. azlaw.pro.
Democrats won control of the House of Representatives in November in part by campaigning to break the gridlock in Washington. The ongoing government shutdown is testing that promise.
A lot of us are very much can-do people. We're very concrete people. We're very practical people. So all I want to do is solve it.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen, beginning at 3 Central, 2 Mountain, on SDPB.
Program funding with your support and Co-op Architecture, an architecture firm of sound mind, strong wind, and able limb, with offices in the Hub City, the Queen City, and the Rapid City. co-oparch.com.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking with members of the Miniluzahana Kolaki Chiapi Ambassadors today, otherwise known as the Rapid City Circle of Friends. It's been about a year since the many members of the group journeyed to the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles for some training. So we're looking back at that time and also looking forward. Today, our guests are Karen Mortimer, Executive Director of MOA, Carl Jaggeris, Chief of Police for Rapid City, Amy Sazu, who is with Rural America Initiative, and STBB's China Lockett. And I'm wondering about, you know, moving forward. And let's start with you, Karen, because what changes do you sort of see in the community since this training and these relationships are building, moving at the pace of trust? What changes do you see?
Well, I think, as I think both Amy and Carl have said, that the piece that is so incredibly valuable from this work is building relationships. And the relationships we built at the Museum of Tolerance in this space that was uncomfortable, it was far away, it allowed us to kind of peel the onion back and see who we are. And so as a result of that, the things that we are doing, our relationships, cause things to move more quickly. So people are a phone call away, that phone call is answered. We've been able to move some of the initiatives forward in ways that I don't think we would have been able to do without all of this work. Mm-hmm. One example is the Rapid City Indian School lands. We had a memorial walk this last October 8th on Native American Day, and we had the support of the police department, for the mayor, the superintendent of schools, and the mayor both gave opening addresses at the walk, and we were remembering the children who died there, and with such sincerity and intents to make amends and try to say we're sorry, and we're getting to that place. The connections we have with the LNI, the powwow, the events that we have that are very visible just are happening so much more quickly and with so much joy.
Chief Jaggeris, how has this training sort of changed or has it, you know, informed how you handle, you know, an incident of racism or accused racism in your community? Looking back to, you know, a few years ago when there was an incident at the hockey game and people were, you know, there was an outcry about that behavior, and then, you know, the very recent, you know, incident at LNI. How has being part of this and being part of these conversations sort of changed how you might approach a situation like that?
Well, it has energized us to really dial down and to focus on a concept that we call collective healing. And we're very fortunate. We've got a couple parallel projects going on in the criminal justice system. One is the MacArthur Safety and Justice Challenge that is helping the Sheriff's Office, State's Attorney, Police Department, other stakeholders in criminal justice to better understand the depth of the issues that we're dealing with. But very specifically to what you were asking, 2019 is the year that we as a department are going to be transforming in a philosophical sense to a concept called trauma-informed policing. And that is, it's got a couple different components to it. We're doing this with the help of some outside experts and some very motivated internal line-level police officers that are doing boots-on-the-ground work with the most vulnerable, our homeless in our community, and trying to understand people's past to better address the current present-day conflict that we're dealing with, whatever it may be. And I guess just to give you an example, we in law enforcement have conflict with people every single day. Almost every call for service or formal interaction is related to conflict. So in most cases, we have time to take a step back for just a second and say, you know, why are you acting this way? Or what is going on? And if we can take that extra moment to try to understand that person and, you know, acknowledge that there's more to the story than to the current issue that we're dealing with, oftentimes we'll be able to develop a relationship, even if it's just for a moment with that person, and have a better outcome that I believe at the end of the day will result in better conflict resolution and increased trust long term, which if we can improve trust in our community, which has very unique mistrust issues, we are going to reduce crime, and we're going to reduce the victimization that is unfortunately very high in, especially with Native women and children in Rapid City. There's deep-rooted reasons for that. There's deep-rooted social issues related to that. But our job in law enforcement is to disrupt that cycle of violence that's occurring. And I think that as a department and as a criminal justice system here in Rapid City, Pennington County, we're on track to really get deeper to the core of the historic mistrust issues, which will benefit everybody in our community.
There have been, some, as Chief Jegras just laid out, and as Karen was talking about, some of the things over the past year that have been done, some things that are coming forward that are kind of policy related, changing how we do business. And Amy, I want to talk and turn the conversation to how each of us can behave on a daily basis, because so much of this is about policy and community and action, but it's also about those little acts and gestures every day that you want to see in a community. And tell me what those might be. What are some of the everyday things that you'd like to see that sort of show us that we value one another?
That's one of the best parts, I think, or one of the best outcomes of our MOA trip. So I have the pleasure of calling a lot of people that I went on the trip with, my friend, whether it's getting coffee together, whether it's, I've done this to Carl a few times, I will hear something or I see it on Facebook and I see people talking about it, and I'll text him or I'll call him and he'll text me back or call me back, or he'll refer me to Don or somebody else that has the answers that I'm seeking. And I think reaching out to those allies and using those partnerships and those friendships that we made on the MOA trip is transforming me in the way that I feel like I can trust a lot of our community leaders more. I feel like I can kind of role model that for other Native American people in our community, and especially the youth that that Rural America Initiatives works with. You know, we can show them that it's not the system against them. It doesn't have to be that way, and that things are changing, but it takes conversation. It takes the willingness to talk about it and to face those difficult conversations with an outcome in your mind, that you don't just want to complain about things and talk about things and rehash all the horrible things that have happened, we want to acknowledge them. We want to, but to walk forward in with a positive attitude and with resolution in mind.
Mm-hmm. Karen, I want to ask you the same question, but first I want to bring China back into the conversation, because China Lockett, as a reporter, you're monitoring the social media conversations, and you're talking to people on the street as you continue to do stories throughout the region, really throughout the state. Have you noticed a change in the conversation? Do you see that sort of pushback that continues? Can you see that the conversation has changed in the past year?
Well, I don't follow that many MOA members on Facebook specifically, but I have noticed a conversation shift in general since the administration changed. There tends to be like a lot more people calling out situations that they think might be racist on Facebook. And that's not just on a local level, that's also on a national level. But also, I've seen on a local level, like, especially working with like the MOA on their stories and other groups too, like One Rapid, that there are people who are willing to talk more openly about race. So I think that people who feel like racism is an issue are pointing it out. And then there's a group of people that are more willing to listen now, which is what MOA is trying to get the community to do. So it seems like it's a little bit less threatening to talk about racism overall. As somebody who grew up in Rapid City, I've lived here since I was 10. It's a conversation that's a lot more at the forefront. And programs like The Inconvenient Truth and like the Memorial Walk to the Sault Ste. Hospital that Karen Mortimer had mentioned really draw attention to a history too. And it's something that has been addressed more in the public sphere and not just at conversations over Thanksgiving dinner or whatever.
China, when you say administration, do you mean locally or national? You mean the president?
National administration, yeah. Yep.
Karen, one of the things I noticed I had to really think about after having so many of these conversations with you and others that you've brought in is when I would often say, you know, we're talking about race, and then sometimes I would say, are we talking about race? Are we talking about racism? And how hard it was sometimes for me to say that word, for me to even say the word racism. And so I've learned so much in conversation with you and others that has informed the work that I do here on In the Moment. And I'm wondering about what you would answer the question I asked Amy a few moments ago, in the sense of this everyday, you know, how do we treat each other? What do you want to see in those everyday gestures?
And I think and that's so hard to quantify, you know. Yeah. I wish we could write a grant and have numbers that said how many times people have changed their behavior. But I do think it's the heart and soul of it is in the small acts and gestures. It's the fact that we're meeting each other in a local coffee shop and giving each other a hug, and people are observing us, having friendships with people with people from another race, and we're friends. We're not. It's and people are watching that and. Last summer, we had a little party at my house with there were five people who had been involved in MOA who graduated with either a master's or a bachelor's degree, and four out of the five were Native American, and we invited everybody and had their families come, and what a cool thing that was to come together. You know, I just thought in my home, I loved having people come in my home, and there were drums and singing going off over the valley in my neighborhood, and I thought, wow, that's a small act and gesture brought tears to my eyes. And when we can change the conversation over the Thanksgiving table and over the dinner table and over a coffee, and when people are paying attention, there's a chance things could shift. This is a long haul. This is not magic, and we're not doing this alone. This is one approach, one way of approaching this in our community. Carl's doing transformative work in law enforcement. Amy's doing remarkable work with the Native community in Rural American Initiatives, and countless other people. But it's the meeting each other on the street and giving each other a hug and calling each other up and being able to do things together, that's going to change our community.
Amy, what's next? What do you think, you know, look ahead to 2019? Chief Jegeris talked about a little bit of trauma-informed policing. What are you looking forward to this year?
Testing.
Just have
one,
about a minute two, left.
Three.
I just see relationships continuing to be built. I see that, you know, networking out into our community and making this small group of MOA bigger, this group of friends, this circle of friends. And that's, Karen said, to give that we give each other hugs, and that is honestly one of the best things. So when we see each other on the street, at events, we're always happy to see each other, and that is something that needs to grow, to see each other as humans and to make friends with other people in your community, no matter what your background is. I think that it is going to continue to grow, and I think the relationships are being built now that are going to help us bridge that in our community and build the trust between the non-Native and the Native American community.